Welcome to the No Direction Podcast, PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage. Remember, we con when you can't.
Ladies and gentlemen, the fabulous Paizo developers!
Yeah.
Probably.
Hi, everybody.
Hey. Just like to talk, so.
I was hey, Rob, if I take a picture of that, like when you're showing it off, would you break my phone?
Probably not.
Okay, cool.
There's one on display in the store, too, so yeah. It's not. I don't think that's. I think we've actually already shown the cover on the blog, so.
Yeah.
It
should be fun.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right, well, we don't have name tags, but we should get them soon because it's early. I am Rob McCrary. I am a senior developer at Paizo, one of the Starfinder design leads, and also the development lead for the Starfinder Adventure Path, which is what we're supposed to be talking about today.
Hi, I'm Amanda Hammond-Coates. I'm development coordinator at Paizo, also a member of the Starfinder core design team and the author of AP number 3 for Starfinder.
Hi, I'm Jason Keeley. I'm on the Starfinder team, helping everybody out, doing things.
So, yeah, we're here to talk about the Starfinder Adventure Path, and in particular, the first Starfinder Adventure Path, Dead Sons. As usual with our Adventure Path panels, if you've ever been to any of the Pathfinder Adventure Path panels, this will be filled with spoilers, because, you know, we're talking about Adventure Path. So if you really, really don't want spoilers, maybe...
Get on out.
I don't know, or be able to separate player and character knowledge or something. We're not going to tell you like everything, but you might learn some things that you wouldn't do. And we'll probably take a bunch of questions because usually I'm used to doing Pathfinder AP panels, and we have lots of APs to talk about. And right now we only have one, but we can talk about some of the plans as well. But I don't want to also just go all over the place. So
you're the intro.
That's true. So at the preview banquet Saturday night, we introduced the Dead Sons Adventure Path, which is our first Starfinder Adventure Path. It's going to be coming out in August at the same time as the Starfinder. Did I say Pathfinder again?
No.
If I say Pathfinder, just assume I mean Starfinder. I've worked on a lot of Pathfinder Adventure Paths. It's coming out in August at the same time as the Starfinder Core Rulebook. It's going to be a linked campaign of 6 adventures, in contrast to the Pathfinder Adventure Path, which is every month. Starfinder is going to be every other month. So, in the store, and I have here in my hands the very first issue of the Dead Sons Adventure Path called Incident at Absalom Station, written by me. I guess usually what we do is we talk about like the titles and some of the stuff that's in there and some of the authors. So we'll go through that, and then we'll, I guess I can talk a little bit about the overall plot, and then we can discuss some of the features and answer questions and everything. So, like I said, the first one is Incident at Absalom Station. Well, let me tell you, maybe we should talk about the Adventure Path as a whole first.
Give an overview.
Sorry.
Yeah, so basically there is a mysterious ship and an asteroid come out of hyperspace near Absalom Station. And it turns out that this asteroid thing might be a fragment of some alien superweapon. And when news of that gets out, it kind of sets off a race to go and find this thing. And the PCs are members of the Starfinder Society, and they probably want to stop this, because it ain't called Dead Sons for nothing. If it gets into the wrong hands, you might end up with a lot of dead sons, and without a son, it's hard to live sometimes. So, basically, it's really, the AP is designed to kind of show off the Pact Worlds, which is the core setting. So kind of the first half, the players are kind of jumping around within the planets of the core solar system, but then they're going to go farther out into the galaxy and meet some aliens and meet some other bad folks that are trying to do bad things.
Now they'll be able to tell which one's Amanda.
I'm Robert G. McCrary.
Yay.
So which one of you is what's...
Amanda is half West. Right?
I am half of West. This side of my face,
partial,
if you look really close,
West.
You know.
You're
got a little West elements. I'm what?
I guess.
And Daigleus.
Oh, I get it.
Yeah.
It's not a West and a Lee.
No, this could be
a Wesley and a
Schneider. I called
him
Sun
West. Fair enough.
It's probably funnier. Anyway, so I'll go through the titles because we actually haven't mentioned all the titles yet. So this will be the first thing, and also talk about some of our authors. So we have Incident at Absalom Station is number 1. Number 2 is called Temple of the 12. Number three is called Splintered Worlds. Number four is The Ruined Clouds. Number five is The 13th Gate. And we close it out with Starfinder number six, Empire of Bones. Among our authors, we have myself, we have Amanda Hammond-Coombs, we have Jason Keeley, we have John Compton, our Pathfinder Society lead developer, and Owen Casey Stevens, another one of the Starfinder team. So that's kind of the overall thing. What else should we talk about here? So is anyone here not familiar with the whole adventure path format? Has everyone kind of seen it? Okay, so that's pretty good. These are a little bit shorter than the Pathfinder APs. We're still going to have lots of back matter. talking about some of that. In the first one here, we have an Absalom Station gazetteer. So it starts off with a nice big spread of Absalom Station. The Starfinder Core rulebook. I really feel like I'm going to talk a whole lot here. So
I'll start talking about some of the stuff in the back end.
Okay. Well, Starfinder Core rulebook obviously has a lot of stuff about like the planets, but there's only limited space. So one of the things we wanted to start off with is called Incident at Absalom Station. Let's go really like detailed into Absalom Station. And that's one of the things we want to do with the Starfinder Adventure Path is use this as a way to, since we're coming right out of the gate, to expand the setting quite a bit.
There's a it's too small for me to show you, but there's some great little vignettes happening in this.
Spike. Yeah, just down the spike, there's a little Sheeran getting held up by some street thug down there.
Of course, you can pass it around.
No, I thought you had it.
Somebody sprints for the door and we never see it again.
I mean, it'll make it easier. We'll just take a copy.
Here's a Yusoki sort of picking. Is that her? Yeah, picking her teeth with some sort of broken off dagger. Also in AP number one, we move on to from the Absalom Station gazetteer, a spread of relics of Golarion. And these are some nice, exciting magic items and hybrid items.
Oh, let's show that though.
Okay. Oh yes.
So okay, what do you say?
That's okay, Rob. If you're excited to talk, please talk. A lot of these things are just sort of stuff that's connected to things from Galarian. Even though Galarian has disappeared, some stuff has returned, such as, you know, this Arc Lord's Ride for the Arc Lord's Nex. You've got these Falcon Boots for the Steel Falcons for Mandaran. The Anvil of Torag. And then some Hell Knight stuff happening over here. Flume Blades, Mask of the Mantis, all this good stuff. And then you have Ungarato. Is it the same name?
It is the same name. It's one of the seven swords of sin.
Dang.
So one of the seven swords of sin, except in Starfinder, it's a machine gun of sin.
No, machine gun.
Sometime during the gap, one of the swords of sin got turned into a machine gun.
It does have a big bayonet piece.
It has a bayonet
still,
too.
Still got some pointy bits.
So this is just some little connections or things you might know from Galarian that have survived in one fashion or another, or have been inspired by things in the past.
Yeah. And then we move on, of course, like at every AP, we move on to sort of a bestiary. We're calling this section the Alien Archives. At the beginning here, we had to basically sort of like fill these up with stuff that would be in the adventure, so you have stats for the things in the adventure, since what we have at this point, but what we will have by this point is this, and then the First Contact free RPG data, which we could pull from. But luckily there was room for a lot of stat blocks, full stat blocks in the adventure. So we were able to, you don't need too much more. So of course, you know, you've got the Akata, which is recognizable, some undead nonsense, some flying dudes, some plant guy, and another zombo. And then at the end of the, we're going to have at the back of each book is what we're calling the Codex of Worlds, which is a one-page write-up of a new planet somewhere out there.
So there's tons of planets in the core rulebook, but we want to do in every volume of the AP just a new planet. Usually they're not necessarily tied to the adventure itself. It's just, here's a one-page write-up with some adventure hooks so GMs can use them to create their own adventures. Occasionally we may tie it in if we really need to talk about a new planet without doing a full gazetteer.
And for, at least for the Dead Sun's adventure path, the inside front covers and back covers are going to be stats for new starships. So this one's going to have the stats for it here, and then some juicy text about it. And then on the back cover, you have a full map, the interior of the thing. This one in particular, to kind of give it away a little bit, this is one your PCs might be flying around. by the end of the adventure, and they can then from here upgrade it and make it their own.
Yeah, we talk about if you've heard about the starship combat, it's kind of assumed that a group is the crew of a starship, and so kind of how they get a hold of the starship is kind of left to the GM for the Dead Sun's adventure path. The first adventure is kind of the PCs getting their starship. So at the beginning of the adventure, they don't have it. By the end of the adventure, they should have their own ship, and they'll be able to take that and use it through the rest of the adventure path and upgrade it as they go up in levels.
And the plan is to have at least one space combat in each adventure path volume, so we can show off that system, and you can have your PCs use the thing that they get that has a bunch of guns on it.
And in those space combats, the ships that you're fighting tend to be, I think, Rob, right? The ships that are on the inside cover of the adventure path.
Yeah, the future volumes.
Yeah, and they're of equal level, so that if the story were to require it or permit it, or the GM were to think it appropriate, then the PCs could basically use that ship that they've, you know, defeated or fought or found or whatever it is. And then so you've got all the stats and you've got all the information and the map and stuff that you need.
Yeah, I think it'll vary by the needs of the adventure. Again, the core rulebook has a selection of pre-made starships, but there's always room for more. So both we want them to be usable in the adventure, but if you're not running the adventure and you just want more starships, you can just take the starships. They're kind of, this is a new make and model of starship. They are primarily, the pre-built ones are designed for like NPCs or enemies, because the PC starship, they can customize pretty much as they want. But they could certainly take that as a base, take one of these as a base, then modify it, or people can just completely build their starships from scratch, and then the GM can use all these other starships.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about this lady on the cover?
We can. That is Farani Nadaz. She is the leader of the Downside Kings, one of the street gangs on Absalom Station. And the PCs mix it up with her and her gang and a couple of other gangs, too, in this adventure path, in this first adventure. So,
yes. And in the background, you've got the Iconics fighting some Akatas back here.
Mm-hmm.
So, little weird blue space lions.
So in this first one, we have this big double-sized gazetteer of Absalom Station. Usually we'll try to have probably two articles in the back of each. In Temple of the Twelve, the second adventure, we're going to have a gazetteer of Castrovel. That's sort of the second planet, all jungly and everything. The third one, Splintered Worlds, which Amanda wrote, has a gazetteer of Eox, the planet of undead. And in the fourth one, the Ruined Clouds, we have there's going to be an article about the Drift, the hyperspace dimension. We're going to have some interesting locations in the Drift, and also I think the plan is to have some random encounter tables, since every time you use the Drift, it pulls in pieces of other planes, and maybe there'll be some demons or angels or other things that attack your ship as you're flying through the Drift. So that's kind of our big overview of the... now we have lots of time. A big overview of Dead Sons. We can certainly talk about other stuff or any other sort of AP related questions. Do we have anything else just to say off the bat before you want to add?
It's been real fun sort of starting off writing a new thing, getting in here on the ground floor and like even just writing a monster or two in the back, right? You know, it's been great. Exciting.
I think a huge difference between some of just the way Pathfinder sort of works with the AP and Starfinder is that this really highlights the space opera aspect of the system, in which you're going all over the place. So in the AP that I wrote, you end up basically going to three different locations, and one of them is on Eox. And so you're venturing on this undead planet. You've got a whole bunch of social intrigue, and also you get to encounter what it is like on this world with this toxic atmosphere. So all the APs, there's a lot of just traveling and moving, and it's the scale of this is really huge in comparison to, you know, an adventure where you sort of might stay in one country for the most.
Yeah, it gives us the flexibility. I mean, we might do an AP that all takes place on one planet, but you know, it's a lot easier to go jumping around and seeing a whole bunch of different things, because the assumption is the PCs have a starship, so why not go out and explore and see what you can find with your starship. All right, so let's ask some questions. How about right there?
How many PCs is this adventure path balanced for?
It's assumed for four. That's our standard thing for adventure paths. Usually, most of the sort of PC-sized ships can usually go up to six. So we want to be able. I think Starfinder Society might be doing six the same way Pathfinder Society does. So in terms of the APs, you might need to bump up the encounters a little bit if you have more than four, but it's designed for four.
So this is a little bit off topic, but something you said got me thinking. Are there mechanics in starship combat for boarding enemy ships?
We don't have the full wow things moving around because people are zipping around. Basically, yeah. what is sort of assumed is that if you want to do this, you beat up the ship until it is. It can't move anymore, and then you just hand wave, and then clank,
okay.
Hand wave. You're on the ship, and now you have the character combat against the crew.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, there's sort of a break between you're doing the starship combat, you're on the hex system, you're doing that, and then when you board the ship, and there are actually pieces within the AP in which it's super open ended what you do. You might be invited to board a ship, perhaps. And then, you can choose whether, okay, are we going to fight these guys? Are we going to board this ship? Are we going to try to parlay with them? It's going to be totally up to the PCs. But yeah, the map of the ship is there. So if you have encounters on the ship.
This is unrelated to your question, but it did remind me of something because you said mechanics. One of the things, not the class mechanic, but one of the things we want to do in the AP is also not just provide fluff and campaign setting, but provide new rules content as well. So in the case of Incident Absalom Stations, those relics of Galarian, it's new magic items that have a tie back to Galarian. Every issue, besides the monsters and the aliens in the back, we want to provide new rules content, whether it's new equipment, new class options, whatever. We've got the core rule book, and this is what's coming out on a regular basis after that. So it might be worth still checking out, even if you're not sure if you want to run a whole campaign or just to kind of get some of the new, because we don't have, like with Pathfinder where we have the campaign setting and the player commands, we don't have those for Starfinder yet. It's just the AP. So we're trying to put everything we can in there to give everybody as much stuff as they can. And be slow for a while, but we're gonna try to do that.
That's
so,
good. Correct me if I'm wrong. Well,
you're wrong.
Okay. not in this particular, the first volume, but I think in some future volumes we'll also be like in this alien archive, like the alien archive, some of these creatures that we present have PC rules for playing one. So if you get to this planet and have the first contact with this alien race and then your PC dies, your GM might be like, hey, you want to be fun that? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big galaxy full of aliens, so if an alien or monster might be suitable to playing an Akata who's like a big tentacle blue lion, maybe is not the best player character, but if it's more humanoid and everything, we want to do a lot to kind of expand playable races, and we'll put, there'll be like a sidebar with the racial traits for a player version of that. Way in the back, he's had his hand up the whole time.
do you run to the Atlantean Empire during this adventure path?
In this adventure path,
do you want to talk about that? Because that's,
you might briefly encounter,
you might well.
are they expansionist, are they xenophobic?
I mean, think of Aslan, what you know of Aslan, and then think of them
in space
and being pretty much the way Aslan was. But they're not a major part of the AP. There may be a very brief appearance of them. I can say that I am very interested in doing something with the Aslanti Star Empire in the near future. I will say that.
And there are a lot of factions that you do interact with.
Yeah.
Or that you are opposing.
They're one of the big threats for the setting, because they are kind of expansion. I mean, they're basically the evil space empire. And
so when the original Aslan ended, why didn't the colonies come back to Galarian and decide, okay, we're riding off, let's stay up here or something?
Because Galarian's a backwater world. They were probably way, more cosmopolitan at that point. That's just not even worth it.
That's explained in the core rulebook. I don't want to give everything away. There are, basically they sort of developed on their own, cut off from everything else. And they kind of view themselves as actual Aslants now. Let's go on to the second row there.
For the AE and Backworlds, wondering what's the default technology on some of these things? Are we talking like, are there any transporters like Star Trek? Is there anything like a Tron virtual world that do computer hacking? What sort of sci-fi trope technologies have we seen that we will or won't see in here?
We probably won't see matter transporters. The teleport spell still exists, but no one has mechanized it, basically. So you're not going to be able to like zoop from one ship to another, quick transport, right? We don't want to do necessarily super virtual worlds where the hacking is, because then that player is off doing the Shadowrun rigger thing for 20 minutes while no one's doing anything else. There's still computer hacking and stuff like that. We haven't full. I mean, in the future, who knows? There might be a thing where everyone gets zapped into a video game for an adventure path. I don't know. I'd say the sort of like tech level is a little bit Star Wars, a little bit Firefly.
Yeah, seems appropriate.
Yeah,
yeah, and I mean, we also a lot of things, particularly with equipment. I mean, we have cybernetics, but we also have biotech augmentations, and in some cases, we're kind of unclear about what something is. That kind of leads it to GMs and players to decide. One of the things with a lot of class abilities is, you know, it's still extraordinary or supernatural or spell-like, but what you actually get that power from is kind of, maybe you've got some kind of implant, maybe you studied on some alien meditation techniques or something, and it's really, we don't want to hard code exactly how you got these powers. We want people to be able to come up with cool stories for why they can do these things, and that works with, I mean, equipment is kind of, is sort of divided into technological, magical, and hybrid, which blends the two of those together. But because of magic, it's kind of like, you know, is it how much tech, is it how much is magic? It's kind of flexible a bit. How about right here?
Okay. part one quick, one potential spoiler. What is the approximate level cap? I don't want to say cap, but max level we can expect? And two, with a name like Dead Sons, and we know that there are really nasty black hole worshipping bad guys out there, will we see the Dominion of the Black?
All right, well, let's see. So the first question, with the first AP, these are a little bit shorter than the Pathfinder APs. So with this first AP, we're probably going to get to 12th level by the end of it. It's a bit slower. Because of that, I mean, we haven't fully fleshed out all the plans, but we very well might do adventure paths at different levels. So not always start at first, for example. We may have later adventure paths might start at 6th or 10th or something to go up back into the higher play. We may even play around with the format. Maybe not even all 6 parts. We could do 2 or 3 quarters or something and split. But right now, we're probably going to get to 12th or 13th with this first one. For the Dominion of the Black, they do not show up in this adventure path, but they are a part of the setting. So they are certainly there as part of Starfinder and might well appear at some point.
Out there. In the banquet, it was mentioned there's going to be some quite tighter integration between the AP and the Pathfinder Society. So, as I've got a group that simply isn't interested in Pathfinder Society play, unfortunately, is everything I'm ever going to need going to be in just the AP, or will I occasionally have to buy a Society product to get details of an event which is kind of referenced in the AP?
Well, the AP and the Society, that was for Pathfinder, for the next, that are really going into, it's the War of the Crown adventure path. So there's not that level of coordination between Starfinder Society and the AP at this point. So it's hard to say, it's not being, how to say this, I don't think that they're going to be tightly linked at the beginning, and we don't know exactly because we haven't rolled all of that stuff out yet. I don't expect that you would have to buy Society stuff.
So it'd probably say something like, if you want to have your players with this part of the story, you'd get such and such Society.
Right.
But if you don't have that, this is the outcome that would have happened.
Yeah, we're not going to have that in Starfinder, at least at the beginning. That's something they're doing with Pathfinder, with the Pathfinder AP and the Society. They were talking about there is the Starfinder Society organized play is going to be dealing with things about the Starfinder Society in general. That's what John was talking about. Going to be rebuilding the society. This is just in terms of the first AP and the PCs being members. That's sort of unconnected. The Starfinder Society still exists. They join. It just this is sort of a reason to give the PCs to come together. The one thing that might be good about Starfinder Society, however, not the one thing, but in terms of the AP, these are coming out every other month. We'll have scenarios every month for Starfinder Society. Those are short little, you don't only have to run those in organized play. Yep. You can download them and have a nice one shot or whatever, or a filler thing. So it actually is a way to provide more adventure content for the game that even if you're not interested in organized play, you can still use in your home games. How about in the back there?
Just wondering, how would magic interact with technology how people would view magic in comparison to technology?
You want to talk about that?
I didn't hear the question fully, I'm sorry.
How would magic interact with technology, and how would the, say, NPCs view magic?
So in Starfinder, magic and technology are very fused, and we have totally gotten rid of the delineations between arcane and divine and even psychic magic. And so it's more of sort of this cosmic force that is underlying creation. So we've got, you know, our two full caster classes, our two only caster classes, which only go up to sixth level. The mystic is sort of more like cleric-y and is sort of more on... the world is a great unknown, and I simply harness, you know, its parts to do my thing, and I really don't necessarily know how that works. And the technomancer is more on the technology side, and it is like, you know, I can speak with the machines, and, you know, the machines will respond to, you know, my touch and, you know, my thoughts and stuff like that. So you definitely have characters with different approaches to the way magic works. It all works in the same way, and a lot of the spells that we have are on both casting lists. And so, you know, in many cases, it's two different approaches for the same result. And there's a little bit of a divergence between, like, you know, spells that are technomancer only or spells that are mystic only. But for the most part, yeah, magic is just sort of this force. It's not, you know, really defined or really separated the way it is in Pathfinder. So you're able to accomplish a lot of sort of different things along those themes, even throughout the AP.
Yeah, and I mean, there'll be NPCs with magic weapons and magic items. The PCs will get them. I mean, it's just like in Pathfinder, you have swords and magic items, and they go just switch swords for guns and technology, and it's, you know, everybody uses both pretty much. Maybe there's a little more towards the technological side, but just because the guns usually start off as technological, and you can add magical stuff to them. But.
Yeah, I think Rob is definitely right that it does skew a little more toward the tech side. Magic hasn't, like, really lost any power. It's just sort of technology has ascended in a very literal sense that the only way to access the drift, which is sort of your faster than light, you know, hyperspace, is through technology. You can't actually cast a spell and then, okay, I jump into the drift and I go to the next planet. You have to, you know, have a starship that has the technology with the drift engine that allows you to move that way. So because technology has sort of gotten up here and magic has sort of stayed here, it's this interesting kind of blend now.
It becomes a sort of point. It's like, why would you go to an arcane university and study for years and years until you're an old Ezrin to be able to turn on a light when I can go to a store and buy this, which has a flashlight on it and a calculator, and I can make phone calls with it and I can watch videos on it. And it only cost me a couple hundred credits, right? So that's why people. That's why we don't maybe like. Well, there might not be this particular tiny little spell. This thing is mass produced.
So you guys have set up the adventure path as kind of like a Star Trek, like you're kind of bouncing around these different worlds. Is there any opportunities to build relationships with people that are kind of lasting throughout the adventure path, or is it like we're going to go to Eox and be like, and we did some stuff, cool, by Eox, and then we just never go back? Relationship there
is a little bit at the beginning that there's some relationships that go. One of the things, because we want to kind of show off the sort of breadth of the setting, the farther you go out, the less
chance you're going to meet somebody that you already know, kind of thing. But that is also part of the reason for having the Starfinder Society being a thing. So there's always some contacts that the PCs have. But I'd say there's a little bit of less in this one because it's going so far afield, because we want to kind of show, hey, there's close by stuff. There's also really far away stuff. Other APs will certainly, you know, it really depends on the adventure path itself and the plot line for how much we want to keep in and have characters recurring through the whole thing. I mean, one thing, I guess, that is a sort of recurring character is the PC ship. We do, it's not so much defined because we want the PCs and the GM to kind of create that, but we, in the same way that Serenity is almost, or the Millennium Falcon is almost like a character, you know, it's, they have some kind of personality. That's what we want the ship, the PC ship, to have. And because the Starship rules enable them to upgrade it and customize it as they, basically every time they go up a level, they get to re-customize their ship and add more things to their ship. So hopefully that kind of becomes a recurring character in a sense that the PCs can interact with and kind of, and is just as valuable a member of the party as they are.
The ship's kind of an Edelon in terms of that, you know, really.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's not a person,
yeah,
but it can have an artificial personality, and so it's really up to like the GM and the players for how much they want to play with that. And you know, you could talk with your ship, or it can just, you know, play solitaire or something. I don't know. Or play Minesweeper. I don't know. Not a solitaire game, because you're playing two people. I can't think of that. Let's get somebody. How about there?
So I was just curious. We were talking earlier about how ships are more or less meant for like four people, but you could have a ship that has spots for like six crew members or whatever. Is it that much of a detriment to just have four people crew a six-person ship? Or are there rules to say, hey, I just hired Drunk 1, Drunk 2, you take these two stations? Or can I just take some AI type thing and jam it into that spot and run with it?
One of the things that you can upgrade on your ship is to have the compute, like we're talking about the artificial personality, which does, in terms of Starship combat, give bonuses during it. So you can, if you want to, focus on that part of your ship if you think you need the extra skill to do this, that, the other thing. But I don't think there's going to be that much of a detriment, because when you're out there doing Starship combat, you can, like, if suddenly, well, now we're surrounded by people, so we actually need two people on the guns. So, Captain, instead of being Captain this round, or, you know, for this combat, get on the guns, right? Or, hey, I'm also really good at guns, but I'm usually the pilot, co-pilot, you get on be the pilot, and I'll do the guns. And, you know, so you can mix it up even in the middle of Starship combat.
Okay. And I want to clarify, too, that the PC ship, or the ships that we assume the PCs are, 4 to 6. Obviously, there's a whole range of ships from one-person fighters all the way to really big, like, battleships that have hundreds of people on them. But
it makes sense to be like, oh, yeah, this is this huge Hell Knight Enforcer ship.
Right.
There's six dudes on it.
Yeah.
But since usually we assume, like, 4 to 6 people is a standard adventuring group, that's, like I said, Serenity and Millennium Falcon, that's the size of ship that we assume that the PCs are going to be flying around in.
We also have gigantic ships that have hundreds of people,
yeah,
you know, for a crew.
So my group still hates me for killing them repeatedly and rise to the Rune Lords, and I would love to absolutely taunt them with the Cult of the Skin Saw. Did Norgamer survive? Is he one of the Core 20? And, well, did the Cult of the Skin Saw survive?
I don't know if we're going to answer that one.
Norgamer is about secrets, so...
That's true. We are probably... We haven't said a lot about the gods yet, and
okay,
we're planning on, before the release, I think on the blog, we're going to do a kind of preview of the gods, so
okay.
I don't want to release. There's certainly no Norgorber in Dead Sons.
Okay,
so that's as good as I can give you at this point.
Okay,
the soul to be.
Yeah,
are you going to continue doing player guides for different APs? And so, have you rethought the format in any way? Or
currently, we're not doing players guides. One of the things, there's kind of two reasons. First of all, I mean, well, we're brand new and we're still a pretty small team, so that's just one extra thing to do. The other thing is, those are really good for giving options. They're good. This is the very first AP. All of the options,
yeah,
are in the core rulebook. Look at the class.
Right.
Pick, you know, it's,
yeah,
there's not a whole lot of information we can do there.
What classes can you play? Yes.
One of the other things, of course, that players' guides do are campaign traits. We're not using traits in Starfinder.
Mm-hmm.
The themes in Starfinder kind of replace the traits. And it could be down the road somewhere. We might do some AP-specific themes. But again, since brand new with the core rulebook, we want people to play with the themes and stuff in the core rulebook.
And there are no bad or inappropriate character options in the core rulebook for the for the AP that I can think of. So there's no reason that you can't just pick whatever looks cool to you and just go with it and play it.
If when we get to 20 base classes, maybe then we'll start looking at player's guides to sort of help narrow things down a little bit.
So I've seen for other games that involve ship battle components that they have like 10, that they have figures that cost like tens or hundreds of dollars. Is there going to be a pawn box for ships here?
The thing that is coming out, I think, right at release is the Starfinder Core Rulebook pawn set. It has a whole bunch of character art, the iconics and whatnot, but it also has all of the sample ships that we have in the that are listed in the Core Rulebook. We will also have Ninja Division is making minis, which will obviously be a little more expensive, but they'll be pre-painted and three-dimensional. But the way that we're actually, so I'll tell you that the, you know how the pawns kind of stand up like this, right? But facing is very important. So what we all did was we took the art and we did this to it. So you put the pawn in the base like this, so you can tell which way you're facing at any given time. We just before I came over here, gave all of the starship pawns that I had to time to take to England. So I can't actually show you that. But basically, you know, super simple, blam, you're good to go, and you can use them for, you know, as any with pawns. Like, oh, this may look like a bone chip, but it's actually not that. There'll be a couple of those maybe in the Alien Archive too.
So yes.
Yes.
How hard was it for you as creators switching from fantasy to science fiction? Because if you introduce hacking and remote surveillance, players can get disturbingly creative.
it was a bit of a challenge. Yeah. I mean, when I was writing this one, and it's like, all right, PCs need to find somebody. So in Pathfinder, they would, you know, gather information with diplomacy, but no, they can just go to a computer terminal and type in a name. And so you do have to kind of think about kind of how the technology or how the future even changes how adventures go. I found it a little bit challenging at times.
Yeah.
What did you all think?
So, yeah, I found it really challenging, especially at first, because it's like, you know, I'm a huge fantasy and dark fantasy fan. You know, I've been playing Pathfinder, before that Dungeons and Dragons, and, you know, was a big D10 fan back in the day, and like fantasy is my thing. But then my very first sort of entry point into creating a lot of stuff for Starfinder, not just developing or working on a team, was I wrote about a third of the spells chapter, which was all 10,000 words of brand new spells for Starfinder. So it was all of the really high tech, really futuristic stuff that you'll read. And that was the perfect thought exercise because I could actually get into the frame of the frame of mind of like, okay, what should exist in this world? What are the types of technology that you should be able to manipulate? What are things you should be able to do to really high-tech computers? What are things you should be able to, like, conjure, you know, for conjuration school spells? And I made, like, a big, long list, and I think I showed it to you at one point. It was, like, 2 pages of my Moleskine, like, way more than I could ever write of spells, but that was just the perfect way to sort of get into, like, science fiction and science fantasy and like remember all the things that I really liked and was a big Firefly fan and like a big Star Wars fan. And it's like, okay, finally now that I'm thinking of this, now I can start to be a little more like sci-fi and stuff. And I think that really, really helped me when I was writing the AP and making it feel not like Pathfinders. I was coming up with, you know, ways to sort of make this plot have meat on the bones.
I thought it was pretty easy. I just put space in front of everything that I wanted to do, and it works out great.
But that is because it's science fantasy. We can always kind of fall back to magic if we need to, you know. So in terms of trying to describe everything, it's like, well, there's magic involved in this, and so. But yeah, it's challenging. Hopefully, we've done a good job with it, and because it is definitely a departure from what we're used to in Pathfinder. Any other questions?
First, is there templates for creating new alien races and planets? And secondly, out of curiosity, what sort of power source does most of the technology run on?
So there are no templates for planets.
Creatures is interesting, though.
What's that?
The graphs and stuff for creatures.
Yeah, well, we haven't gone too much. The monster creation in Starfinder is completely different from in Pathfinder. It's actually, we haven't really talked too much about it, and this probably isn't the place to, but...
We did have a whole seminar about talking about creating creatures.
About,
and then also
we,
creating...
Well, I wasn't asked that one.
No, you weren't at either.
Yeah, we did
actually.
Have the point
of
one.
The voice again.
No, I'm not going to do the voice again. I mean, not to say we're not, not going to talk about it right this instant, but there'll be way more detail if you can find... The recordings of those two panels will get way more detail. But right now,
what were the panels called?
Designing an alien and designing a planet, or designing planets.
And for those of you who don't know, No Direction, KNOW, they record all of our panels and put them up. So we have the recorder right here. Hi, guys. but yeah, so if you want to check out any other panels, if you missed any of the other Starfinder panels, like the designing an alien, they'll have the. They'll have the recordings online. But
real quick.
It was over there.
Also, concept in the alien, which preceded.
Right, concept in the alien, which is the drawing part,
yeah.
the sketching it out with Remco. But like we said in the planets, so we don't have like a mechanical system to say, it's 8 points for it to be high gravity and 6 points for it to be high technology. We don't have any of that. It's sort of like go buck wild on that one. What we'll have in the back of Alien Archive is a way to create NPCs and monsters, which is different than the way you create PCs. We use a system that's very similar to the Pathfinder Unchained creating monster systems. You have that book, you can go flip the back and go like, what you have, you pick an array and you pick a CR and then you get a whole bunch of numbers and those are the numbers. You don't have to worry about like calculating its dex bonus and adding it to its attack base attack bonus to get its range attack roll. No, we have that range attack roll number given to you. And then the way we do that, after that, we do graphs. Like, this is an aberration, it gets an aberration graph. Is it, you want to make it act like a technomancer? It gets a technomancer class graph. And then we get other graphs, some of which are in here. I think one of the things we're doing is basically for any undead that we're doing, we're kind of also making a template graph for them.
Mm-hmm.
So you can make an undead whatever,
yeah.
i.e. A void zombie, an undead void zombie of any kind of other thing, just by slapping this void zombie template graph onto it. So it's it lets you get a little more freeform and change things up.
Yeah, that's an interesting point too, is that the big departure, because NPCs and monsters are designed the same way. So you don't have to build an NPC by giving all of its levels. There's just class graphs that you add on there. And so it should make it easier for the GM to run and easier for the GM to create. And it cuts out a lot of the sort of extra stuff that a PC needs. But an NPC who's only going to be in one combat, you don't need to know all of the different things that that character might have. So it's just the class abilities that they would use in that combat. And you had a second part, though, too, or is that
yeah.
both?
Out of curiosity, what is the power source for your technology?
Oh, the power source of the technology. We kind of don't really get into super specifics. Like, the spaceships have a power core, and they put out power core units. And a gun takes up 8 power core units. So we don't really, because we want to be able to say, well, this is a living ship, so obviously it's got a beating heart, and that's its power source. Or this is a devil ship, and it's got an inferno engine or whatever. So we can sort of, we made it generic enough so that when we need to put the flavor on, we can put the flavor onto it. No, but basically stuff is technological. It's kind of...
I mean, we have
batteries
we do have batteries
use,
and charges.
Like, yeah,
and,
that power guns and other stuff like that. But, if you go to recharge that battery, it may be a technomagical charger that's charging it up.
Yeah.
So a lot of it's left open.
Yeah, we also, in the back of the equipment chapter, have, under goods and services, like a charging station, basically. And every settlement is assumed to have a charging station, and you pay half the amount of... credits that you would normally pay to just buy a new battery. And so, when you're in civilization, you can go recharge. And I think most starships also have recharging stations on them as well.
Yourself,
so
put your suit into the cigarette lighter.
Yeah, pretty much.
When you get in.
Yeah. So, I mean, we do cover it. It's not like a really super complex rule system, but we do cover it for stuff like weapons and armor and things that use charges.
I do want to point out that for all spaceships, cup holders are extra. They're going to cost you.
Those take up a full expansion bay?
Those take up a full expansion bay. Cup holders.
Okay.
We use a lot of cups in space.
Space cups.
Yeah.
I'm
curious if you talked to a little bit about Starship Combat and the party roles. I used to play a lot of Star Trek, Colossus, Star Trek, way back in the day. And when you went into space combat, you were the helmsman, you got almost like a panel, and you kind of controlling that. So I'm curious, in this game, you're still looking at your character sheet, or if you're the pilot, you get a modified character sheet.
It's not quite like a modified character sheet, but thank you, Crystal. When you are the pilot, there are a list of things you can do that are listed in the the Starship Combat section. And they are, you know, a number of actions. And as you get, say, better at piloting, you actually unlock some more fancy things up to the point where, I don't know, may even be 15. If you have 15 ranks in piloting, you can do a, what do they call it? An audacious gambit, which lets you sort of like move the ship this way and turn it this way and then spin around and then you get a plus to this. So, you know, so it is lots of choices that you have. You will basically, when you're looking at your character sheet, essentially be looking mostly at your skills when you are the captain or the engineer or the science officer or the gunner or the pilot. Those are the five. There are no more.
There's also a Starship character sheet, though.
Yes.
So in the core rulebook, I mean, we have like a blank character sheet and a blank Starship that is kind of that the whole party shares, where you have all the stats for your ship.
For the Starship, yeah. Where your shields are in each arc and where the guns are and then what kind of damage they do and then all the other... when you start taking too much damage and getting your systems all busted up. Does that answer your question, by the way?
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw in the Starfinder Delve that the character I was playing had a something-something-something healing seal or own. And I was wondering, are potions still a thing? And if so, what's the difference between a potion and a serum?
So we don't have potions. We have healing serums, which are basically healing potions. And then we have what's called spell amps or spell ampules, and they're basically injectable spells. And that's kind of works like so. It's like a potion, basically, but they're called amps, and you just go, and yay, and now I have a thing. So
future.
Yeah. Future.
They got more future.
The future is.
And we don't have scrolls either. We have something that replaces scrolls in a similar way.
I just wanted to say to you, there's actually a video up on Facebook of the Gamma trade show Starship Combat Demo. So if anybody's interested, it's floating around on Facebook.
Yeah, trigger warning though, I may or may not rap during that. So just be forewarned.
Never mind, don't go watching it.
Is it a space rap though?
It's a space goblin.
It's a space goblin rap.
Space That's goblin rap.
Yeah. It's quite good.
So if you want to hear Jason do a funny voice, then rap.
But so that's sorry. Yeah. We didn't do a lot of Starship combat at this show here. I don't think.
Yeah, we not so much. It'd be hard to do in the Delve in that sort of brief for everyone to get a good taste of what's going on. We could have done a really truncated one, but since we've had a couple of the demos floating out there, we kind of wanted to focus on the character versus character stuff.
So definitely look online because we've done some demos, and if you want to really see how Starship Combat works. And if you come to Gen Con in August, we will be doing... I think the plan right now is to have like Starship Combat tables where people can come and just sit down and give it a try.
If you want to get on a plane and go to the to England, I'm pretty sure we're demoing some Starship Combat at UK Games Expo.
We are doing Starship Combat. We're doing two tables.
Yeah, so either go to England or you can go to Gen Con or you can in August, then you can do all the Starship Combat yourself.
Tanya probably has a spare seat in your luggage.
Probably not, actually. We had just a couple minutes left here.
Yeah. Let's talk about Starship Combat for those of us who don't like using minis, or do Theater of the Mind or Theater of the Whiteboard. How easy is Starship Combat to do without?
It'll be tricky, right? You can we do sort of count on the hexes because you have a speed of 8 to do, and turn facing is very important. You might need to draw a hex board on your hex grid on your whiteboard and essentially do that, but. I don't think it's impossible. It's going to require a little bit of work to sort of make sure that everyone's feeling like they're able to do the things they want to do and do the power, you know, because powers are very much move this and turn here and or you can shoot in this amount of hexes and that sort of thing. So the other thing, though, I would like to sort of, if you want to, I've sort of said, and this might not be the best marketing, but the Starship Combat stuff just kind of lifts right out of the game if you don't like it. But you will like it. You'll love it. Because your Starship, you're not going to be spending, it won't mess up like player character wealth or anything like that. It's like, if they don't spend X number of credits on Starships, they're going to buy more gear. No, all the Starship stuff is sort of self-contained. So you can lift that out and maybe just take it down to like a number, like 4 or 5 roles, piloting and then a shooting and then do that and then shorten your
You could also use a less complicated version of it if you wanted to continue to do the theater of the mind, you know, like in the same way that when you do hand-to-hand combat and you're sort of just describing what's happening and somebody says, am I close enough to hit him, you know, and it's just all sort of...
Wibbly.
Yeah, it's just all sort of like, yeah, sure, or no, there's a rock in between you or something. Like, you could do the same thing with Starship Combat where it's like, oh, you know, your ship lurches to the side and... You're looking at your comm screens and you're looking at your HUD screen and there's something there's a blip that's coming up, you know, it's about five clicks behind you and you could sort of describe it in that way. Yeah, you could, it would still work.
It would require you to do the things you need to do when you have normal combat, you know.
I mean, it's designed as a mini game that's added on to the system, so I would actually recommend, like, even if you don't use minis and everything for regular play, it could be an interesting change, but now we're going to play with Starship figures for, you know, a half an hour or something, and that could be, it doesn't mean you have to use minis and anything else, but I do think, like, you could remove it completely and just say, okay, you fly over here and that's it, but you lose kind of something if you don't get to play and go pew pew and shoot other starships. So I want to just give it a try anyways and see.
Very important. Okay.
Pew pew.
All right, I think that's our time, folks. Thank you so much.
Coming.
Thank you for joining us for another edition of the No Direction Podcast PaizoCon 2017 seminar coverage, made possible with the help of Justin Sluder and Ryan Hiller of Geek Dad. To find more great Pathfinder audio, go to NoDirectionPodcast.com.